Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Snell, for today, May 31st. We are excited tonight to be speaking with Suzanne Patterson. But before we get to Suzanne, I believe my sister Denise has some beauty news to share.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Beauty News. Just something really quickly. I received a tweet from one of our loyal listeners, Aisha Tiffany, and there was something interesting from the Phoenix Business Journal. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it for you. It says, entrepreneur, new law gives Sparkle Bar founders solid foundation. The road to success is never easy for entrepreneurs, but it took a legislative act for Leah Scheibel and Alex Bradbury to open their dream makeup studio, Sparkle Bar. In spring 2014, the pair developed the idea of opening a full-service makeup studio that will focus on applying makeup and not selling it. The ladies say, we're building our business by focusing on our core competencies, which is makeup and giving women that extra confidence and pep in their step when they want to look flawless for any event. At the time, both were working as consultants in a medical software company. They wrote a business plan and set up appointments, and they were about to lease space in Old Town Scottsdale when they were contacted by the Arizona State Board of Cosmetology. The board would not let them open unless every artist employed there was a licensed cosmetologist and esthetician. According to state law at the time, anyone who practiced makeup artistry required a minimum of 600 hours training and a license, which would cost thousands of dollars. You were able to work as a makeup artist and apply it to clients when you were in a retail setting, but as soon as you stepped out of the department store, it became illegal. They contacted the Institute for Justice and a law firm, and together they crafted a bill that would make the Sparkle Bar a legal operation. They got the state senator U.S. senator from Phoenix to sponsor Senate Bill 1320 on March 23rd of this year, and they got it signed into law. The new law will go into effect 90 days after Arizona's legislative session ends, so Sparkle Bar will open for business later this year. I'm pretty sure there are probably more situations like this. Because I know that in some states, I'm not sure exactly which states, but I know in some states you're still required, as far as doing makeup, you're required to have, some states require a makeup license, which of course meaning you would have to go to some type of aesthetic school or some type of cosmetology school to get that separate so-called makeup license, which falls pretty much under cosmetology. And I know most states are requiring you just to get a cosmetology license or an aesthetics license. I know when working at certain places like CNN here in Atlanta, and I'm sure CNN in New York and D.C., you have to have one of the two to do makeup. So I'd be interested in knowing if any other states were the same as Arizona before this Bill 1320 came about.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm pretty sure there are others who are facing some of the same issues. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
But, you know, as a makeup artist, it really would not hurt to have an aesthetics license. I think they go hand in hand. I think having that understanding of the skin only enhances what you do as a makeup artist.
Right. Absolutely. Well, for those of you who are listening, have a comment or a question throughout the night, you can give us a call at 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. We'll also be on Twitter, so you can follow our tweet chat by using the hashtag Beauty Lounge and as well as Beauty Tag also. All right, so we haven't spoken to Suzanne in a while, so it will be great to catch up. Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Hi.
Wonderful. So good to hear your voice.
So you can hear me. Okay, good. Because I wasn't sure whether I was logged in the show or not. How are you girls doing? Good?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Awesome.
We miss
it's
you.
It's been a while. It's time for our year. And I was thinking about you, Janice, when you had emailed me because I had just gotten through teaching HDMU and it was all about ultra high definition. So, but to comment on your comment about aesthetic training, I do feel that makeup artists should have some kind of histology, skin histology. Because our clients do look at us as being somewhat of an expert to be able to, I mean, how often do you get asked about skincare and certain things about skin? It's just a natural outreach of the client,
yeah,
makeup artist. And that's part of your service, really.
Right,
right. Have some skin histology. And I strongly, strongly support that. I run across so many artists. And this is just not touched on even in makeup schools. There's nothing done about skincare. And it's just, they're clueless. And I end up usually having a small little session about basic skin histology. And there really is a real need so that you can talk intelligently about skincare. And it really backs up your professionalism as a makeup artist anyway. You really should have some skin histology so you... Because makeup is, you know, is you're a bit of a cosmetic chemist. You're applying a substance to a surface, and you get, you know, an end reaction. So you do need to have some working skin histology to understand, you know, why your makeup works or why it doesn't and what you need to change.
Right. Absolutely.
So... I don't know in your when you work, but this HD thing is driving me crazy. I mean,
I think the last time we had you on the show, I think the Alexa was about to come out.
There are so many things that have happened between. I think it was
yes
last year sometime. I can't even remember. It was over
a few years ago.
Yeah, and still, I think, I'm trying to think now, trying to think back. I know we talked about, you know, the red camera morphing ahead, and
mm-hmm.
now, you know, the digital cinematographers that I work with now shoot in 5K only. And, you know, there's 6K capability with 8K on out there ready to go. That's how fast this thing has morphed. And it, first of all, can we pronounce 3D officially dead? Because I think that has peaked and gone away. And I, for one, am glad about that because I can't even watch 3D. There's, you know, something organically wrong with me because it just makes me violently ill. But I noticed that some channels are no longer broadcasting in 3D, so I think it's kind of gone away. You're not going to find a 3D TV set on the market. It's one of those faddish things that come and go, and sometimes I wonder how much waste there is in electronics anyways, because everything, you buy something, truly 6 months later, it's obsolete. It used to be that way with computers. Now it's that way with cameras.
Right.
It's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. So,
Now, Suzanne, can you just explain to our listeners, because you mentioned 5K and you mentioned 6K, can you just explain the difference between the two?
Okay. So here's what's happening. Right now, terminology is changing because we are talking about more about ultra-high definition now because we're shooting at ultra-high definition. What is now called our 1080p format, which is what we have, you know, our government allows broadcasting at 1080p. That is the resolution format that we can pick up from our broadcast. That is now called full HD. So full HD is the current format, 1080p, which we're now broadcasting it. Ultra high definition. This is also known as super high vision, ultra HD television, ultra HD, or UHD TV, which I think you're going to hear a lot more UHD TV, I think especially when these 4K television sets become a little more accessible money-wise on the market. You're going to see that. I think that's where it's going to settle. But this is a 2160p capability format, and it is going to morph into what we call the 8K UHD format, which is, you know, we have to have, the government has to be involved in this and approving this, the bandwidth and all this kind of thing. So our electronics and our cameras have always been way ahead of what we can actually see in the end. So for instance, 4K, we're going to call it UHD TV. This is a 3,840 pixels wide by 2,160 pixels tall. So that's basically 8.29 megapixels, which is about four times as many pixels as our current standard 1920-1080 format. So that's four times as many. 8K, this was, remember when we talked back in, I believe it was 2010 or 2011 when I was on the show, we talked about becoming 7680 pixel format, and
right.
Nobody had ever heard of it, and everybody was quickly Googling it, and I said, it's out there, it's out there. Well, it is, Japan is going to start broadcasting next year in 2016. Of course, they're always the ones that lead the technology, invent the technology, and then they put it out there for the rest of the world, and then Europe grabs it up, and then we follow Europe. That's kind of the way it's been. But so 8K, so UHD TV, keep that in mind, UHD TV is 7680 pixels, which we first talked about back in 2011, wide by 4,320 pixels tall, and that's 33.18 megapixels, which is 16 times the megapixels that we have in our 1080p format right now. It's going to bring this, when we go to 8K, if this country ever does go to 8K, Europe will get there before us, it is going to be closer to the detail of IMAX, basically. So you're going to be able to have surround sound with super high vision, all these different bells, beeps, and whistles. It's just mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. I just don't understand the need for it, but it is coming. And for all you young makeup artists out there, this is what you have to keep in the forefront of your mind, because everything is in video capture. We do not record in film anymore. That's gone by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
On January 16th, back in 2013, NHK, which is the governing body in Japan, announced that satellite broadcasts could begin in Japan in 2016. Well, they just confirmed that last month. So our ATSC governing body here in the United States back in 2013 called for a proposal for a plan for a system to support this video transmission starting at 3840 and 2160. So what this means, so that's kind of like testing our toes, like, yeah, we're going to go forward into this. We're going to allow companies to offer more bandwidth services. And actually there is a television station in, I believe it's in Cleveland, Ohio, that is actually testing this format right now in off hours.
So they're testing the AK?
Testing the 3840 by 2160 picture resolution at 60 frames per second. That's huge. Okay, that is just really, really huge. Because, I mean, you know, we're at 1080, so this is 2160.
Okay,
so we're testing 2160 right now. You know, our ATSC, our government body is testing that right now to see that. But, you know, actually, last year YouTube added a 2160 4K option to its video player. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can actually import a YouTube video up. If you've got a 4K TV, YouTube will let you see it, you know, end to end, 4K. Now, we'll talk about the TV sets in
yeah.
a second.
So
but that's the sensor, is your receiver. I'm sorry, say again?
No, I was just going to say, before we go any further with the technology portion, can you, like, break it down to makeup artists, especially younger makeup artists, the ones just starting out, exactly what this means as it pertains to their application?
Oh, this is what I tell my students who come to HCMU. Think of your work, and I mean, it can be, because everything is full HD, everything, even your smartphones, you know, video cameras, everything's full HD now. So if you've got a smartphone, you've got, you know, HD capability. If you are not working in production, even if you have just a nice little bridal business going on the side, well, that the wedding party, the bride, is obviously going to have her pictures and her video with streaming capability. And all that's going to, you know, at minimum, should be full HD. I mean, a photographer or a videographer should be shooting in at least full HD or better these days to get a good quality product back to their client. But here's the thing, and I tell them, you don't have to really understand all of the technical jargon that I'm talking about. It doesn't really require you to know all this. It just requires you to understand one thing, that if we take the bridal artist who has a nice little and whose reputation is word of mouth, and, you know, word of mouth is very big. It's even bigger than a website. It is definitely word of mouth that really builds a business like that. Well, that bride that she just did, she's going to be able to stream, or she's got a copy or whatever. Let's say that she has her brand new husband has to have a big screen TV in his man cave kind of thing. And the only thing why I say that is because I'm married to one that has to have a big screen TV. So they can be as big as the last time we talked about. The largest screen that's available on the market is a 105-inch TV. Okay, that's roughly a little bit bigger than a queen-size bed. So the resolution, if it's a 2K resolution TV set, and you've got end-to-end resolution just in 2K, it was shot in 2K, and you have a resolution of 2K, the detail that you're going to be able to see is absolutely amazing. You're going to be able to see so many things about your makeup, especially if they do a tight shot or a close-up. Boy, if you're blending and you're foundation matching, all of that is going to be right up there on a 110 or one-inch screen or 105-inch screen. There are now 4K TVs out there that are 110. We'll talk about that in a minute. But that's who you're making up to, is that screen. That's what you have to keep in mind, is that if your work, even at the bridal level, is going to be thrown up on a big screen TV like the, and they can actually zoom in with their remote, if they see an anemone on the face, what does that do to your reputation? It tells you that you'll find out how really good you are as an artist simply by what that looks like on a big screen TV, which is why in our classes, in the classes that I teach, we have end-to-end big screen with our video camera. All of the work that the students do step by step is we see it through the camera and we put it up on the big screen so that they can see their blending techniques, so they can see their color matching techniques, so they can see how they do brows or how they do liner, how well they can outline the lips. Those things really, really stand out huge in HD. Hope I'm not scaring people, but
no, but it.
But that really is how you have to look at your work. That's really what you have to refine your work towards. Because if you can do this in commercial type of makeup, such as doing bridal work, then you know you're going to be pretty comfortable doing it in film and TV, because you're already used to doing it in that format. But it's that big screen TV that is going to tell the tale of your technique and where you're falling down and where you need to practice. And so I tell my students after class, you need to go and, you know, hook your smartphone up to a TV set, the biggest TV set screen you can buy, and practice your makeup.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Okay. I mean, even if you have like a flip video camera or whatever, you need to be doing tight close-ups on your blending, and you need to be throwing it on as big a screen as you can find and practice, because that's where you're going to gain your confidence. That's really where you're going to see how fine-tuned you are in the details of doing makeup. And with this new resolution, I mean, it's just really going to be even more demanding. The percentage of makeup that we're able to use in these growing formats is going to be less and less and less. I mean, the saturation. I try to keep all of my application saturation with foundation and all that to 15 to 18% on skin, because I find that if you're oversaturating the skin, you can absolutely see it. And it doesn't look natural. It begins to look mask-like. And it's even worse on men's skin. That's where you really have to knock it down to about 12 to 14%, because you just don't want to see it on the screen. You want them to have a clean complexion, but it's the no-makeup look.
Right.
I teach how to do this in class. It's called the four no's. The four no's. No texture, no shine, no, what is it? I have to go look it up. I'll look it up and I'll tell you, but it's the four no's. It's in my PowerPoint. So look it up. But I keep getting on the four no's. But in any case, that's just some of the high points, you know, that you definitely have to look out for. And it is. It's you're making up for that big screen TV. That's really what makeup is all about. If you're doing makeup for a business, any kind of a business that can possibly be, you know, that's recorded and can be seen. And it's just getting it's getting crazy is what it's getting.
So Suzanne, do you think because, you know, of course we see all the different brands and you know, they're coming out with products and, you know, they have that HD label on the products. Do you think, because to me, I think it's more about the application as opposed to the product itself. Do you think that there are some products out there that really matter when it comes to HD?
There is no such thing as an HD makeup. It's all in
right.
the technique. It's
right.
all in the product choices according to the skin type. Because
right.
skin type, this is, you can't just cookie cutter and take a brand and stick it on somebody's face. Because they may not have the skin type that will wear that for continuity and long wear.
Right.
It's all in the prep more than anything, and it's making sure that you don't combine substances that produce anomalies on the skin. For instance, there's some makeup brands that have a, or there's a particular makeup brand that has a high degree of glycerin in it. And it's a vegetable glycerin, and vegetable glycerin kicks up shine like crazy. It's a maintenance makeup. Silicone is a horrific maintenance makeup for me. I avoid those completely because I don't have time to go back and pull the makeup on and off and redo it again, and keep it, you know, fresh and keep it going throughout the day. There are just some things that I stay away from because they don't provide the continuity and long wear. Sometimes they even oxidize, and you think, oh, my gosh, what's wrong? It's turning color. It's, you know, it's going dead on the skin. There's a number of things that can happen. This is where skin histology that we talked about earlier
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
important, because you are going to be selecting a makeup, a foundation, or, you know, the foundational process that is going to be compatible with that skin. So that's the important thing. That's, you have to be a little bit of a basic cosmetic chemist to be an effective makeup artist, because that's what you're doing. You're applying a substance to a surface, and you're going to have an end reaction that you want to achieve and things that you don't want to have happen throughout the shoot. You want them to look the same at hour one as they did at hour 10 is the same that they looked at hour 1. So, I mean, to me, that's continuity. That's a high-performing makeup that does that. So there are things that you definitely will avoid for HD. Now, I'm not talking about print, because print's different. I'm strictly talking about shoots that, you know, last longer than 4 or 5 hours. So
mm-hmm.
typically in video and film. So I look at what, I never look at the brand. I look at what is in the ingredients, you know, what is in it, what kind of skin type will wear this product. And then the second thing that I look at, of course, is if it's divided up into value and temperature exactly the same way that camera read skin and value and temperature. So if it's got both of those things, and it's at the top of my list. So I prefer to use a wax hybrid makeup. That's because it works extremely well on all skin types. It does not kick up shine. It's easy to maintain. It's the only thing that I really use in my kit. Obviously, I had a hand in designing it, so I really, really do like it. It's, you know, Graftovian's Glamour Creams. So I've used that ever since we developed that back in 2005. And I've tried, you know, others, different ones that come out, and I'm always going back, because you get used to working. It's all about speed. And you get, when you get into that mode, you tend to stick with products that deliver the performance that you need under speed, because it's all about, it needs to be done now. You well know, everything has to be done minutes ago. So stick with the products that deliver the performance that you need and in the time frame that you have to get the makeup done as well.
Absolutely. I just want to go back for a second. You talked about, you know, when you were talking about the four no's,
one of the things you talked about was texture.
Right, right. Texture and finish are kind of the same thing. When you're doing a, men have different skin than women. I mean, they're definitely very different, and they have a lot more oil glands than we do. They have skin that is about 5 times thicker than female skin, so it definitely does present a different challenge than women. So there is a lot of the times there's the oil issue. Obviously they have a higher degree of testosterone, which also contributes to that. So when I'm looking for my PowerPoint notes so I can share some of them with you. So the four no's in your makeup application is no obvious makeup color, texture, finish, or shine. So you definitely don't want to have a color anomaly happening on skin. You do not want to have a texture or a finish issue, because if you can see it, then what happens is the eye is drawn to that. They're drawn away from the action to what's wrong with his face kind of thing. What's going on? What's that on his face? If it's got too much of a texture to it, maybe it's an application technique flaw. If the finish has too much powder on it, you're going to see it. Powder is probably going to go away forever in ultra high definition. We're going to have to start, and this is what I've been experimenting with, because I work in my own production company. We shoot with a Red Epic, so that's a 5K resolution camera, and I have pretty much gone away from powder, and I'm using an airbrush overlay to finish the makeup with that gives a it's not a matte, because you can't have super matte skin, and you don't want dewy skin either. One's at one end of the spectrum, the other to the other. What you need is dull, satiny look. That's what natural skin looks like. If you ever go outside and somebody's just got normal skin, they have kind of like a dull satin texture to their skin. And that is what I'm able to achieve with this technique when I do a concealing overlay with the airbrush. And it produces a no-makeup look for men. This is what I do for men. I've been using it a lot lately on the ladies as well. So I sort of developed this technique because I am a personal to a presidential candidate right now. And so this individual, and it was kind of neat because when this person came into the studio at the store, it was kind of a neat thing. It caused quite a bit of a stir, but a lot of fun. But we worked in the studio privately to develop this look. And it's very appropriate for the type of camera capture that's happening right now. So, and of course, shine is a big bugaboo. You don't ever want to fight with shine. So this concealing overlay that I do, it helps eliminate the need for that as well, or the need to worry about that, or at least it cuts it down pretty low.
So are you applying the airbrush overlay over creams?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And Graftobians works because their airbrush foundation has a this is something that when we were back formulating it back in 2004, I wanted one that had a bit of copolymer in it, because copolymer has it's an ingredient. It's like, I don't want to call it plastic. It's not plastic, but it is a cosmetic type of it's not a sealant, it's not a plastic. What it does is it takes the pigment and it allows the pigment to bend over. This is the best description I can provide. It allows the pigment to bend with the contours instead of looking flat on the face. And back then, that was something that if I was ever going to invent a makeup product, that's what I wanted in this product. And so they put that in there, and it just worked out. It's just been great because I've been able to use this medium without the pigment to use it as part of the concealing overlay that I do. So it's available without pigment, and it is part of the ingredient in the airbrush. So there's two different ways that I use it in place of powder. And I have found especially with men's skin, this gives a much more expedient, less touch-up. If I do have to do touch-up, it's very quick. I don't have to do a lot of blotting. It allows the skin to breathe, which is another thing why I like it. And it works very, very well with their wax hybrid. So I'm just completely back-ended into this because I'm all about speed, speed, speed. And when you find something that works in your technique, you need to stick with it. No matter, you know, what brand you're using, if it delivers the results that look inborn on the skin, on the screen, then it looks great. You know, you're good. Stick with it. You don't need to fix it. You got it going on. But if you need to readjust fire, then you do need to keep looking and researching until you get that result that you need.
Wow. I'm gonna have to try that.
Definitely. You know, here's the thing. As I've said before, the HD camera is a supercharged color theory reproduction tool. That's what it is. And so you've got to stand up your game to be able to work with it, not against it, and not be afraid of it. But you've got to step up your game. If you're lacking in you know, color theory and camera and how it relates to the translated image, well, you know, learn a little bit more about it so you can back end that into your skill set. It's really, really important because as this becomes more and more technical, you'll be forced into it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Another thing, you know, so you might as well embrace it if you're going to continue to work in this industry and, you know, make friends with it and make it work for you. It's really not difficult. It's just not coming off the counter and doing makeup, you know. It is, you have to understand why you're doing this in relation to how the camera perceives and translates what you're doing on the native image, which of course is your talent. So it's going to require that. It really, really is going to require that as we move more and more into these megapixel formats. And, you know, your blending technique, your ability to match foundation to the skin. A lot of makeup artists don't even realize how many people are neutrals on walking the planet. That, and I've said this, I know, a number of times on the show, that if I took 20 people off the street and I sampled their temperature and their value of their skin, temperature meaning if they're warm, neutral, or cool, value meaning how light or how dark, because that's the basic of what the camera looks at. The camera picks up temperature and it picks up the value of skin. 9 people will be warm, 8 people will be neutral. I mean, 8. These are the people that have been mistakenly called cools for decades. When they're neither warm or cool, they have equal amounts of the warm and the cool in their skin, so they tend to look like a gray neutral. I'm a neutral. I'm a middle-of-the-road neutral completely. And it's so interesting to see because I have my students, I never tell them what my undertone is, And it's very interesting to see them, you know, foundation type me, because they really, really struggle with the fact that they've never worked in neutral before. The schools don't teach this. You have to, this is something you have to learn, because the camera will call you out in a heartbeat, and you will have that horrific line of demarcation if you don't have a matched neutral to a neutral. Now, there's a few subtle ways to cheat the camera with some tricks and technique that I teach in my course, but you can't rely on that. It's simply because of a lack of knowledge. You need to be able to read neutral skin tones. There's a lot of them out there. Even, and it doesn't matter how light or dark the skin is. There's a surprising amount of neutrals in women of color. I know I'm giving them a lot to think about, but you know, this is all friendly stuff. Don't be afraid of it.
You know, Suzanne, every time you come, we're taking notes. So when you hear that silence, that means we're trying to get that last little thought out on paper.
Well, I completely understand. But
this is good stuff.
and if you've got a lot of young artists out there listening right now, you know, this is for your benefit. This is, you know, I've been seeing this coming on for 20 years now, and, you know, I'm an old-timer in the industry. And, I mean, my special effects, the way I do special effects now has changed quite a bit. Oh, my gosh. Changed.
How so?
Dramatically. In that I now, I'm kind of moving away from full prosthetics and getting more into GFAs and PTMs, which are gel-filled appliances, and prosthetic transfers. This, I truly believe, is where the majority of your special effects that we're not talking about, you know, the stuff that the guys at the top tier do. We're talking about the majority of people in TV shows and, you know, doing out-of-kit effects. I really believe, you know, and this is, you know, prosthetic transfers and GFAs aren't really classified as out-of-kit effects, but I see that pretty much standard in ultra-high-definition format.
Because, I agree.
You know, it's you have to be able, you will have to be able to lay these things down.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, I honestly, truly, because I do this more often than not, I'm moving away from traditional silicone prosthetics and gelatin-type prosthetics, foam gelatin prosthetics, because they do look heavier and obvious. And if I can get away with the same thing by doing a prosthetic transfer or a GFA, I'll do that. So this is something that I've been starting to teach the last couple of years, and the classes are really catching on now, because you really do need this as an out-of-kit effect. One of the things that we developed for Paint and Powder Cosmetics, or I did, was a silicone gel, a paste, because I wanted something that could be close to what we call out of kit, that wasn't messy like the liquid silicones are, but something that you could scoop out of the jar, mix together, and slap it on the skin and have the end result be so believable and realistic, and that it would set in under 5 minutes. So we did this. We developed it. It's our Trauma Skin Effects sculpting and modeling gel. We have had so many people tell us, oh, my gosh, we're selling it over in Europe now to some big production companies. Production companies are buying it from us. There's one production, one makeup key on one of Bruce Willis's movies said Bruce Willis came into the makeup trailer because he was so blown away by the scarring that he did on this particular actor, and he wanted to know what he was using. And I'm like, wow, that was really something. That's when you know you feel really good, is when an actor, you know, of a reasonable name says, what's the name of that stuff that you're using?
Right.
It was for real.
And since you mentioned that, he quickly fired off an email to me
the next day to tell me that. And I've got that email framed, and, you know, he told, here's, you know, the story of how it happened. So we have it up in the office, and the girls just think it's, you know, kind of cool. But
Suzanne, since you're mentioning it, can you repeat the name of it again?
It's from our Trauma Skin Effects line. Mm-hmm. It's Sculpt and Model Gel.
Okay.
And, you know, there's another competitor I won't, you know, mention, but we've been told that it's far superior to his, if you know what that particular product is. But I just,
yes.
I'm not using it. So I developed it last year. I have a really good lab guy that worked with me. And we worked for like 3 months to get this down, because I said, these are the parameters. This is how it has to perform. And it's just, you know, we're ordering every week. So it's become one of our flagship products. And I'm just, you know, extremely proud of it, that we've got something out there that really fills the bill. But we also are developing a prosthetic transfer material that will be available soon, that will be easily moldable, will have less freezing time. There's a process to making these things. We're trying to make the process a little bit easier, especially for beginning artists, because I'm all about really helping the beginning artists get on the bandwagon. So I try to have products that are simpler to use than, you know, what's traditionally being used, because it can get really complicated and it can get really expensive and it can get very temperamental if you don't know what you're doing. Today's artists don't really want to spend that kind of time curve in developing, sadly enough. I mean, I wish they did, but we're able to bring technology up a little bit higher with some products because of materials that we have available to us now that, you know, we didn't have 5 or 6, 10 years ago. So it all tends to be relative. But as far as special effects, I really think every single makeup artist out there, and, you know, if there are young artists out there, take a special effects class, because it makes you a better straight artist. There are things that you do in special effects that develop an eye and a creativity that you don't get in straight makeup. You honestly can't develop it. It's a whole different approach. And time and again, I prove this time and again, after a student comes out of one of these classes, I would never have thought to do something this way, or I didn't see it that way, and this has really developed my skill and ability, and has developed my ability to manipulate products in a way that I couldn't see before, because of what special effects demands in the creativity and the illusion that you have to create, because straight makeup is an illusion, but it's not the same kind of illusion that special effects gives. And it does require a little more introspective skill that every artist, you know, is able to develop. So even if you just take an out-of-kit effects class or something to that effect, because you will see makeup differently. And quite frankly, being able to have an out-of-kit effects skill, well, if you were up for a job and all things being equal in 2 makeup artists and the producer director says, well, I need you to be able to do this casualty simulation or that casualty simulation, you know, a bruise or a scratch or something, why would you lose that job? Simply because you didn't have the skill. You know, that's, in today's competitive market, you almost have to have a full complement skill. from simple effects to straight makeup, because otherwise, you know, you put yourself out of a lesser market. Makes sense.
Well, true. Now, Susan, who's making some cameras? I know one time you were telling us about Sony. Are they still pretty much the leader in all this?
Okay. Remember how we talked about camera atmospheres?
Mm-hmm.
The atmosphere of a camera and its ability to create the image within that atmosphere, the ability to manipulate the image in that atmosphere, is how a digital cinematographer chooses his cameras. There are some of them that are just dyed Sony users because Sony articulates the way that they see an image. Other people prefer a warm, like, for instance, Panasonic. I love working with Panasonic. The first thing I do when I get booked on to something is say, okay, what kind of camera are we shooting? I got to know right away, because that changes exactly how I'm going to do my makeup on everybody. If I find out it's a Sony, then I know that my Sony bag of tricks has to come out, because God forbid if I get someone who is very, very pale, because Sony tends to be a very cold atmosphere, and it pulls really hard on the red spectrum. So people who look, who are very pale, look very dead in a Sony camera. So you have to figure out little tricks and ways how you can push that cool, undertoned person into the neutral zone. And there's tricks that we do that I teach in HDMU on how to move your cool toned, your pale toned people more into neutral warm without the camera noticing it, that it's an actual color change. So that's the thing. There are certain color palettes I completely avoid in Sony. There's just some that just will not render, because they'll make the person look like a vampire, or there are certain color palettes that you need to stay with when you're working with different cameras, because you risk really changing, what they actually look like. I'm always happy with a Panasonic, because Panasonic is inherently warm. Even your cool-toned, pale skin types look a little bit more lifelike in Panasonics, where they look lifeless in a Sony camera. The red camera has a neutral atmosphere, so it's pretty unique, because it's very manipulative to what the DIP and the director of photography want to achieve. So you must be very certain, though, that you do makeup in a baseline temperature, light temperature. So again, that's a whole other thing that we talked about, how makeup begins with light. If you do not have the right kind of light in which you're doing makeup to where you can see optimal intensity and full spectrum, you're going to be absolutely lost on set trying to correct your makeup. So that's the thing. Red is a neutral atmosphere, but a lot of times, depending upon what the look and the feel of the film is, or the shoot is going to be, they can adjust it, over to one side or the other. So you have to be kind of aware that you do your makeup in no less than 5,000K light, so that you see the full spectrum of the skin tone, and you see the full spectrum of all your color palettes, so you have optimal view. Because if there's any color shifts, then you'll be able to correct your makeup, because you're absolutely correct in the native, natively, meaning that you've matched their skin The color palettes you've seen at their purest saturation. So it won't be a lighting issue. It won't be, you know, a camera issue with your with the makeup. So that's the thing that I harp on all the time. All of us have a color perception skew. Some can be so very minor and less noticeable. But when I do a color perception test with my students who come to HDMU, I have them grade color on a grayscale. And I have them, actually, we do this simple exercise of grading color intensity on a grayscale. And typically, a makeup artist will be able to see color intensity changes in half steps. And some makeup artists can see color intensity changes in third steps. I used to be able to see color intensity changes in quarter steps, but now because I'm so much older and my eyes have gotten older, that's gone to third steps. I can't see fourths anymore. But, that's due to aging. That happens. That ability to be able to grade color intensity and to be able to grade color value is important, because if your value and temperature are off, then why is that? Sometimes you can point, or in a situation, usually it's because they have done their makeup in less than 5 degrees Kelvin temperature lighting, which doesn't give them the full spectrum. So if you have less than full spectrum on your skin and on the skin that you're working, you know, illumination of the skin on that you're working on, and have your makeup out there, you know, testing the temperature and value of your skin, you're not going to be able to see it at full bloom. You have to be able to see all of your color, all of your texture, everything in full bloom. I have found over the years, as I've tested artists, that lighting needs to be no less than 4,800 and no higher than 5,000. Because if you go higher than 5,000, then you start getting into what we call the blue range. That's from blue. If you go below 4,800, then it goes down into full spectrum yellow and red, and then it cancels out the blue and green. So you want to be able to see it all. And that is right at 48 to 5,000.
Nice.
And if you've done your makeup in that range of temperature of light, and we sell the lights in the store. We have the ICANN lights. We sell a ton of them because they're so portable. They're LED, and they're completely dialable up from 3,200K to 5,600K. So they are the perfect light for makeup. If you've done your makeup in the right kind of lighting, then, you know, you can go stand your ground on set with your talent and be able to make sure that your talent is lit properly, because the lighting guys don't necessarily respect the makeup artists. And you know, if they know that you've done your makeup in proper lighting, then you're able to stand your ground, because I always go to set and I'll watch the line monitor and make sure that that they aren't bouncing too much light off one side, or it's too hot, or they've got the temperature off, because, you know, I can stand my ground with these guys. I have found over the years, they're more concerned about the overall set. They're not that concerned about talent. Now, we're not talking about major film and television shows. We're talking about the rest of us, the majority of us who work in, markets and do all kinds of, commercial shoots, industrial shoots, or whatever it is. They're not concerned that much with talent. And you need to be able to stand your ground when you go to set and protect your talent and their makeup, because I have found lighting guys sometimes, miss the mark. And if you understand a little bit about balanced lighting, then you'll be able to help protect your client. And, you know, you'll gain the respect of the crew as well. So that's just something that is food for thought, but it's definitely something that used to happen to me, especially when things were transitioning to HD. And, you know, I could just talk right back to them and say, no, look at this, you know, let's change it. Let's pull back the halo to behind the head instead of, you know, on top of it or whatever, or move the key to the, you know, to this angle or whatever to make sure that, you know, there's a balance happening.
That would never happen on a major motion picture.
No, it won't happen on a major. And this is what I'm saying. But in small markets, where the rest of the art, I mean, you know, you guys work in, you're that 0.1% that's, you know, in that world. But the rest of us are down working in, you know, the blue collar thing. on the everyday typical shoot, or I do a lot of political shoots. I do a lot of commercial. I do, you know, a lot of those things, or I did. I don't do so much anymore. But you know, it was definitely all about standing, you know, protecting your talent.
Yeah.
The knowledge, you know, to work together. Now, you know, I work with the same guys over and over again, so, you know, we're kind of a team now. And they respect the fact that, oh, yeah, we got to make sure that, you know, the talent, looks good, that kind of thing.
Right.
And
right.
Those kind of things. So, yeah.
And I was just thinking, because when you said, you know, you would go to set and you would look at the lighting, and I was thinking how, like with us, you know, go to set and look at the lighting. Well, they won't start lighting until after the actors get to set and they're already,
right,
you know, done up. And so I was just thinking, wow,
right,
that's a luxury because, you know, during that time when you're going to set and looking at the lighting, we have to be in the hair and makeup trailer doing the makeup. So it's like we would never get that opportunity. So it would have to be after we get the made up, after you get the set, and then you can make your adjustments. But that's a luxury to be able to go to set beforehand and to, you know, see all of that,
right,
to see what the situation is and be able to make your adjustments as you do the makeup.
And early in my career, you know, I was where you were at until I moved here, and you know, I don't do union work anymore, but I come from both sides, so
right,
I really understand what you're saying, and the fact is that for the majority of us, because I now consider myself part of the majority, not the minority, but the majority of us who do, you know, these types of shoots, the variety of shoots that we have coming up, whether it's commercial or political or industrial or government or, you know, whatever, we have those issues, and I find that the lighting people are lesser trained than the people I used to work with in LA, you know,
mm-hmm,
many years ago. There's a different mentality here in this area. Now, you know, I can only speak for the, you know, the DC metro region, but it does, you know, I worked for a while when I lived in Phoenix, Arizona, and then when I lived in Texas, so I worked in different markets. So I've had, you know, a little bit of experience in all these different markets as I've come to the East Coast and worked, and here is where it's very, very different than it was in L.A. So, but you're right. I mean, you're absolutely 100% right. But for the majority of us who are on these very smaller shoots, what I would call more intimate shoots, because there's
mm-hmm,
not a
right
crew, okay, and, you know, which is great, and these are the things, it's still the same circumstances, it's still the same technology circumstances, maybe the protocols are different on what you can do, but it's still the same set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Do they, and by the way, do they give you adjustable lighting when you're in the trailer or wherever you guys go?
I wouldn't call it adjustable lighting.
Really?
Do
you know what it's rated at? I mean,
they have it's you know, it's the mirror that has, let's see, we have 2, 4 maybe 4 bulbs, 2 on each side. One's like a fluorescent bulb, one's a tungsten. Well, 2 and 2. One each on each side.
You're not. Yeah. So you're probably at 32K with higher intensity. Does the light look warm or does it look cool or does it look neutral when it's turned on?
When it's turned on, let me think. I was gonna say, I was gonna say in between neutral and warm.
Okay. All right. Well, and you know, I mean, that's. But I have known some union artists who have actually taken their own little personal spots with them for close up because they needed the extra light to be able to have an illumination. Are you guys allowed to do that on yours?
Well, I guess we would be allowed, but it just hasn't been necessary. Now the person that you knew who took their own lighting, were they in like a standard hair and makeup trailer, or were they in like one of those?
I got in the tent. I don't really know.
Oh, out in the tent. I got you.
Yeah. No, I don't know if they were in a tent or in the trailer. I just know that they had bought a couple of sets because they felt like they needed more exact. And I thought, well, this is good.
Yeah.
The lighting. So I just.
Yeah, maybe they weren't. Maybe they weren't in. In like a hair and makeup trailer, because I just find that the light is more than enough. Yeah.
Okay, that's perfect. Yeah. So does anybody have any questions or?
I think this was great tonight.
Huh?
I said everybody's just listening.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, everybody's
listening. Or is it all crickets? I don't know.
Everybody's just listening.
It's always so good.
You know, one thing that we talked about, I hope we talked about this. I can't remember if we did or not on the last show, but if there's any aspiring print artists or printed artists out there, you know, they're moving away from still cameras. In fact, you know, a lot of them are using RED cameras to shoot their prints. I think Vogue shot. Where did I hear this? Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, W have all gone exclusively to RED. So what they do is they just take the print off the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using 4 and 5K cameras for this. So there you go. I mean, that allows them to literally pre-edit shots and use a variety of lenses that give them all kind of textural control. I mean, it's really taken the print more and more photographers are going to video cameras to shoot their stills because they can just take a print
right
off of it. And there you go.
Oh, wow.
So that's another thing to consider, that there is that move to, I mean, they had been shooting video and still, but now because of the development, the rapid development of the pixelation of the cameras, they're just going to the video camera. You know, why waste the effort with two when you can get everything you need with one?
Hmm. That's true. That's interesting. That's for sure.
Okay. No, that's
a 5 video.
And I mean, print icons, Bruce Weber, Greg Williams, that's what they use.
Wow.
It really is a challenge. It really is a challenge, but it's doable. It is completely doable because I, you know, if I can do it, anybody else can do it. There's no magic tricks to this. It's just gathering more information and storing up your knowledge base and enhancing your technique with it. You know, your biggest competitor is not going to be other artists. It's going to be technology.
Right.
And its ability to optically alter what we see coming from the lenses. It has an amazing ability to manipulate light, texture, and skin tone, even before it's digitally picked up and recorded. I mean, that's what the cameras can do. It's just the way it is. It's just the camera is simply an editing tool. It's a pre-editing tool, a supercharged color theory. That's what I call it. It's demanding. It is going to be a little more demanding, and it really is going to require that a developing makeup artist has to be able to see their technique on some kind of resolution. You can't just go and practice it and look in the mirror and think, oh, this is good. No, you need to throw it up on a monitor. You need to really see, and you need to get it on as big a monitor as you can, and then move in for a close-up and examine your technique. Most definitely.
Wow.
And, you know, everybody, if you've got a smartphone, you can do it. So you just simply hook it up to your TV set. Do have to see it in some kind of pixelated form besides your naked eye, because Ultra HD sees better than some people can ever see. Mm. They'll pick up detail. I mean, the thing is I'm not even sure that I am going to be able to watch a 4K or an 8K TV set, because I don't think that my eye can process that information. If I can't process 3D movement and it within 3 minutes I'm throwing up, I have no idea. There is an organic issue involved in here. I don't think the human brain or the eye was designed to assimilate that type of electronic connectivity. I'm not the only one.
No, you're not.
there's three or four other major heavy hitter makeup artists that I've talked to frequently, recently, and we got on the subject of 3D going dead, and it's like, good, because I get violently ill. And I said, I get violently ill. I throw up. I have to walk out of the room. I thought it was just me. But there's that thing. I just don't know how that's going to play out. I really don't. They're out there for sale. Okay, LG has a 4K Ultra HD TV screen that contains 8.3 million pixels. So the resolution is four times that of our current format. And so, you can buy this TV set. This TV set they have for sale for $99,999.99. Go figure. But you know what? Don't settle for that, because Samsung has a 110-inch TV. It's a little bigger than a king-size bed that will have full end-to-end capability, and it's $149,000. So, hey.
Wow.
But the thing is some of these 4K TV sets have limited ability to translate end-to-end. So if you're shopping for one of those 4K TV sets, you better look at the specs very, very carefully, because the refresh, the resolution, all those things are different between those TVs, because right now we can't get a full broadcast because we're only in 1080p. So But anyway, kind of the long and the short of it.
And you have a class coming up October 23rd through the 25th, right? Your high definition?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I teach HDMU twice a year, right. And then I have some special effects courses that are coming up. So I am on the campaign trail with this presidential candidate, so it may change my schedule somewhat. So people will just have to check the website if there's any changes.
Right.
2016 is going to be very challenging, but it should be exciting. It all is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Well, so then tell your website and where they can go and check out your classes and also your website for the store.
Well, just go to Suzanne Patterson, PATTERSON.com. That's my website. Our store is paintandpowdercosmetics.com. And you can, our new Sculpt Gel, among some other things. Actually, we're going to be carrying Mel products. We just got them in the store. You know, the Mel bog caps are what everybody is using. They are that wonderful, wonderful vinyl bulb cap that Brad Look's unique formulation, and they are the bomb. So we just shipped 50 of them over to Greg Kahneman, India. So I'm like, whoa, we need to get these in the store. They must be really good. And so we got them all in, and I'm like, wow, these are amazing. So I can see why everybody likes them. So we're going to be carrying, and we're going to be carrying their PAX paints as well. So if you're an effects artist, and I've always felt like Mel's PAX paints were the best on the market, and so this is a good time to bring it all into the store.
We're going to have to get you back on the show just to talk about all that you carry in your store, all the products.
Well, PAX paint, man, that is your best friend. And I've done some kind of unique little mini prosthetics with just PAX paint, and they have looked fantastic in HD. So PAX paint is super easy to use and manipulate. And it is, I don't know if you've ever worked with it before, but it is a mixture of an acrylic adhesive and acrylic-type paint. And it's got a few other things in it. But it's a texturized paint. And you can thin it out to where it's great to use as a wash on prosthetics. And it's a great blender to blend skin and prosthetic together. It's just wonderful. It's fantastic to use as a tattoo cover. It's got a bazillion uses. But the one thing that there's a way to bump it up to use it and create prosthetics. And that's something that I'm going to be teaching in the prosthetic class. And it's fun and easy to do, but it produces some pretty amazing results. So PAX paint is something that you definitely want to get a hold of and learn how to use, because it has so many great uses. There's a million ways to make PAX paint, but I feel like Brad and Louis have really come up with a fantastic formula with fantastic colors that I couldn't even create as well as they do. And they have a thinner that allows you to use it as an airbrush. So you can, it's absolutely fantastic for tattoo cover. So if you're using the ink palettes as a tattoo cover and airbrush as a step, PAX paints can really change the way how you do tattoo cover. And that stuff is on. You can swim in it. You can. It stays on until the cows come home. And so they've also developed a special remover for it that soaks it off beautifully. So PAX really is something that is going to be really good for HD. As all kinds of use. Yeah, I would love to. I think it would be fun to have a show where we do these little, go through some of the stuff that we have in our specs, because we have a lot of, we've got probably about 25 proprietary products that I've developed just for, you know, for the Trauma Skin Effects line that are really useful for so many things. And, you know, we have a really good reputation around the world, so I guess we're doing something right. And I love the fact that, you know, we've been able to grow our proceeds to Baby Haven. So that's our end game, you know, with the store.
Right.
That's always been our end game. And we have just supported them for the last 10 years now. It's been 10 years. And every year it seems like we're able to, our sales proceeds grow that we're able to just, you know, be a major income stream for them. And that's what the store was designed to do. That's what we created it for in the first place. It's not my income. It's theirs. So babyhaven.org if you're interested in what we do, and that is who we support. That is the store's purpose and mission to support them, and that is rescuing abandoned newborns who've been abandoned by their birth mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are rescued and then adopted out, and they've had 100% adoption rate. It's just been wonderful.
Great.
A really wonderful partnership over the last 10 years. So we're also going to have our, we haven't had it for a couple of years, but we're going to have our big dollar store sale for fundraiser, you know, where we put products in 50-cent bins, dollar bins, $5 bins. I think the most expensive thing is $10, but, I mean, you can walk away with, you know, a $50 item for $10, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
That we've accumulated, and that we've accumulated, like Graftovian has sent us a bunch of seconds, you know, stuff that's, you know, completely sellable, but, you know, it might have a dent or the mirror might be, you know, just a little bit cracked on an edge.
Mm-hmm.
Can't sell it, so they send us, you know, they send us all this stuff, and we just put it in the, you know, we'll do our Baby Haven fundraiser. I think we're going to do it sometime this summer. I'm trying to get it organized, but if you're in the D.C. metro area, it's a lot of fun. We raised $2,000 in one afternoon for Baby Haven, and it was just so much fun. And we have raffles, so we've got, you know, a makeup chair and a couple of other things that, minor imperfections, but, you know, it's like they're completely 100% perfect to me. But, you know, you can't sell them. So we said, okay, this goes into the Baby Haven, fundraiser. So be looking for it on our store, Paint and Powder Cosmetics, on Facebook and on Twitter. We always post there. So. Always good to talk to you girls.
Yes.
So wonderful. And I miss
you. We've missed you. Yeah, I know. We've missed you.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, I'm glad that y'all are just doing great, and I look forward again to next time. And
yes. And yes, we really do have to do that product show with your store. I think that would be great.
I have such good intentions of doing these YouTube videos on how to do some of this stuff, and it's so hard. It is so hard to take a day and focus on. I mean, I really want to do that, and it's the best way to be able to share, you know, technique and how to use, you know, especially with the PAX paint. There'd be some great videos I could show with that, and I just have to take a day and do this. I really do.
Right.
And then there's a whole editing thing, too. So then it'll probably be off the front of the rear. But I have good intentions. I'll stay around to doing them.
We totally understand.
Well, if there's any other questions I can answer, I'd be happy to. I hope everyone feels encouraged. I mean, with this information, don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. Just grab on to it.
And not just that. Take what you know, because I'm going to take all of my notes and I'm going to share it with somebody else.
Good.
Spread the knowledge.
It just means that you just have to step up to the game. You just have to step up to the camera, eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where for a lot, you know, years and years, we just thought of the camera as this lofty thing. Well, no, you got to get eye to eye, and you got to get inside it, and you got to see what it produces on a screen. So, you know, if you got a smartphone, then you just hook it up close to a practice session, and then throw it up on the biggest screen that you have, and zoom in, and you know, look at it. And examine it, or come to class, and you can work in a full-up studio and see it from a professional. And but in any case, that's the second best way to do it. And it's just at some point you have to see your work, because if you don't know where to go, if you don't know what you've done and how to correct it,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to be trying it. I don't know about anybody else.
Well, I am a lifelong learner. I mean, I you know, take classes from, you know, master classes if I can find them, and you know, if I can get there. I don't know enough about this industry. I just don't know enough. I honestly don't. You know, I change it so quickly. I'm fortunate that, you know, I have a technology mind, but it's just like staying ahead of it is virtually impossible. But I realize that, you know, I don't have to stay ahead of it. I just have to keep in tune with it and stay eye to eye with the camera and just refine where I need to refine. You know, I've changed some techniques this year in preparation for UHD, you know, should it suddenly come on us. I did not think that full HD was really going to happen in 2009, but it did. And here it is, 2015, and Japan is rolling over to, you know, UHD in their broadcasts and satellites, so that means Europe's going to pick it up, and usually we don't want to be too far behind Europe. So it could be here. It could be here by 2018, 2020. You know,
mm-hmm. Which is not that far.
It really isn't. When we started talking about this back in 2011, I actually looked up my notes. It was 2011 when I first talked about this. It's 2015 now,
right?
And that's 6 years. So we're already, you know, we're already into 5K. I mean, our commercial cameras now that I work with are 5K. So 8K is just a next little. It's not a giant leap anymore. It's just the next step. Back in 2001,
yeah,
it was a giant leap. It's now the next step. So it's just something to keep on your back burner. Make sure you've got lighting that, you know, is between 4,800 to 5,000K, and you will be able to see full spectrum, no matter what your color acuity is, whether it's very mild or whether it's significant. I have found that 4,800K to 5,000K color acuity puts you on a really good ability to see, you know, color intensity at full bloom. So that's the safest place to be with your lighting. Anything less than that, and you might not be seeing values correctly. So,
wow.
You know, that's one aspect of it. Make sure that you're using products that allow you to meet value and temperature, especially warm, neutral, and cool. Make sure you've got that in your kit. Now, in my kit is keyed towards warms and neutrals because that's the majority of the skin tones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, out of every 20 people, 9 would be warm, 8 would be neutral, and 3 would be cool. And so cool is your occasional undertone. And Graftovian has a palette that I keep in, you know, I just keep the tester palette. It's got 16 shades in there. We all custom blend, so really I don't even need 16 shades in a palette. You should be able to get your custom blending down with between 8 shades, and that is an ultra light and a very dark. So if you really want to hone your custom blending, you really only need 8 shades to work from. Try to get it down to 6 shades to work from, and you're really super, super pro with custom blending. I've just gotten lazy, so I just take the tester palettes with me because I'm like, I'm too lazy. I'll just take one and a half step it, you know. I just want everybody to feel very encouraged, and don't be afraid. Just dig in.
Dig in. That's right. That's the only way to tackle it.
Exactly
dig in.
Right. Yeah. If you can dig in, because you know this whole business, this industry is full of speed bumps and grinds and stone walls and brick walls, and so you got to learn how to get over them and around them.
Right.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, Suzanne, we thank you very much for joining us tonight. It was so good to have you back on the show. And we're going to definitely, I'm going to email you so that way we can try to see what your availability is to get you back on so we can do the product show.
I would be delighted to continue. And if anybody has any questions, just email me. I answer every email. So if you have any technology or technique questions, just email me. I'd be glad to help.
And shoot out that email to
Suzanne.
Uh-huh.
Suzanne at creativeartistry, letter F, letter X, .com.
All right.
Suzanne at creativeartistryfx.com.
Cool. For sure.
Thank you
and
so much, Lee. Always a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
You, Suzanne. Have a good night.
You guys have a Facebook? Does the show have
mm-hmm.
a Facebook?
We do.
Oh,
yep.
Oh
yeah, that would be great to answer some questions on there.
I remember you told me there. Okay, so yeah.
I think
we
did that one before.
Is it Illusions Beauty?
No, it's Beauty Talk.
Beauty Salon.
Oh, there it is. Okay, got it.
All right. And
okay,
you can listen tonight. They can leave their comments and questions there if you like on Beauty Talk Online as well.
Okay, so I'm on the page, but I don't see the questions. But I guess I can figure it out. I'm not real good with Facebook, but hey. All right.
Okay.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you. Good night, Suzanne.
You bet. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And for those who are listening tonight, thank you for your continued support. If you have questions about tonight's show or suggestions, you can go out to our Facebook page, which is Beauty Talk Online, and leave your questions there. And I'm not sure if we're going to be doing a show next Sunday. We will be on vacation out of the country, so just stay tuned. You never know. There may be a show, but definitely the week after that.
You can always come back and listen to this week's show or any of our previous shows just by coming out to the website and going through the archives and pick out a show or two or three or, you know, if you want to just listen to one after the other the entire weekend, that's fine by us, too. But come back and just...
We'll definitely post what our plans are. So, you know, if there is going to be a show, we'll definitely post it so that you guys will know.
Sounds good. And then also we will be sharing information via our BBM. So, again, if you do not have BBM, you should have BBM. You can go to BBM.com and you can follow the Beauty Talk page. Let me get you that PIN number. Once you get your BBM set up, you can invite us to be your friend on BBM. The PIN number is 2C0B8299. Again, it's 2, the letter C is in Charlie, 0, B is in boy, A is in apple, 299. And we'll be sure to post that on Facebook as well as Twitter.
All right. Again, thank you for your continued support. Tell a friend about Beauty Talk. Spread the word. We have some exciting things coming up that we'll be sharing in the weeks to come. And again, look out for Glam Squad Diaries, which will be happening around late August. So look out for that as well. Thanks again for your continued support, and we will chat with you possibly next week, if not the week after that. Have a great night, everybody, and have a beautiful and blessed week. Good night.
Good night.